Welcome back to the second hour of It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copley. It's time for this week's in-depth interview with a special guest from the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Copley.
Welcome back. If you're just joined us, I'd like to let you know that this is a two-hour show in which we try to explore whether we have more in common than divides us. In the first hour of the show, we ask questions that matter, avoiding politics, instead focusing on the issues that underlie politics and current events, issues that affect us all, young or old, locally and globally. And in this, the second hour, we balance the creative with the intellectual by featuring in-depth interviews with local, national and international guests from the arts. The show combines a debate topic with an arts interview because I feel discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways we engage with the world. It's all a question of balance. And if you'd like to find out more information about the show, you can go to the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. Well, this week is my special guest from the arts. I'm pleased to be interviewing Catherine Tickle, Northumbrian piper, fiddler, composer, recording artist and educator. Catherine is the recipient of the Queen's Medal for Music for Outstanding Contribution to British Music, the Musician of the Year in BBC Two Radio 2's Folk Awards, and very recently the Order of the British Empire, or OBE, in the Queen's Birthday Honours List for services to folk music. Catherine is widely acclaimed as the foremost exponent of the Northumbrian pipes. She works collaboratively across many genres, which makes her work contemporary and vibrant. She's released 15 of her own albums and has also recorded and performed with the Chieftains, Penguin Cafe Orchestra, John Lord, Evelyn Glennie, Liverpool Philharmonic, London Sinfonietta, Sting, for whom she has played on 4 albums, and many others. Her amazing career began as a young girl of 9 when she picked up a set of Northumbrian small pipes, inspired by her family and by the music of an older generation of traditional musicians. By the age of 16, she'd released her first album and was named the official piper for the Lord Mayor of Newcastle upon Tyne. At 18, she turned professional and began a busy touring schedule and career which has gone from strength to strength. She's been the subject of TV documentaries, composed music for theatre, presented radio programmes for the BBC and TV programmes on musical composition, and toured throughout the world, both solo and with the Catherine Tickle Band and The Side. Catherine's work is deeply rooted in the landscape and people of Northumbria, and her championing of young musicians is long-standing. She's the founder of the Young Musicians Fund at the Community Foundation, which has raised over £100,000 for young people in the northeast of England. She's also a lecturer on Newcastle University's Folk and Traditional Music degree course, and in 2015 she became a Deputy Lieutenant of Northumberland. Catherine is currently touring with her new folk classical ensemble, The Side, comprising Louisa Tuck on cello, Ruth Wall on harp, and Amy Thatcher on accordion and clog dancing. And they have a new album that's just come out. Welcome to the show, Catherine.
Thank you.
You started your career so early. I'm wondering if you can paint a picture for us of what it was like for you as a very young girl, first exposed to traditional music.
Well, it just felt very normal. I wasn't aware that I was being exposed to traditional music. It was just normal music to me. My dad sings and my mum used to play the concertina. And so I heard these tunes and these songs all my life.
So what was it like in your house? I mean, when would they play music? Would they just sort of come home and pick up an instrument and start playing? You know, how did it kind of go down in your house?
Well, Dad, I suppose it's easier when you sing because you can just do that anyway. You don't have to get any equipment out or anything.
Yes, so yeah.
Dad would just be singing all the time, really. And he also, I remember when we used to go maybe at a weekend, if we went out for a drive or for something to do. My dad was very into the history of the area that we live in, Northumberland. And so he would always take us to places that had castles and battlefields and things like that.
Right.
And he would always, when he got to those places, he would sing the songs that went with, you know, the songs about that particular battle or the songs about the castle. And so I was very used to standing in the middle of Northumberland with my dad singing very loudly and dramatically to nobody in particular.
Right. So he was really conveying to you his passion about this type of music.
Yes, and I think it's just something, he's a born performer really, and my granddad was the same, and my great granddad apparently, so they were all similar in that they need no excuse to perform, even if nobody's there and nobody's listening, they get up and they can't help it really.
Oh, that must have been very alluring, I imagine, as a child, to see people that engaged with music. What kept you like interested in that kind of music, you know, as you became a teenager, rather than, you know, moving into sort of more pop music or whatever?
Well, I was interested in pop music as well. I think when you're at school, you obviously just, you're interested in the same things as your friends are interested in. So I had all of that. I used to listen to the charts, the top 40. It's, you know, so I could talk to my friends at school. But the traditional music, the folk music, it was always going on. And I think the reason that it was so important to me was that I had a lot of family links to it. Mm. And also I had another social circle really outside of school, with lots of friends that I knew through the music. And that apart from the music itself, that kept me involved.
Mm. I understand you prefer the term traditional music to folk music. Can you explain to us the distinction for you?
To be honest, I don't really mind what people call it, but for myself, I believe that I play traditional music, and there's lots of different explanations about the difference between traditional and folk, but for me, it's to do with the way that you learn the music. Mm. And for me, a traditional musician is somebody who grows up learning the music from family, friends, learning it within the community. Mm. And being aware of its social significance as well as just the music, if you know what I mean.
Right, yes, yeah. So to you, folk music would be more like the genre or the style, and traditional music would be that style of music, but learnt in a way, as you've described, through people around you and in the culture. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I have to say that I didn't know what the Northumbrian small pipes were before preparing for this interview, and now having seen a picture of them, I am quite in awe of creating music from this instrument. I would think one needs to have a very high degree of coordination with so many different parts and things going on, and I was interested to see they're powered by bellows rather than breath, you know, as with the Scottish bagpipes. And I understand you didn't have any interest in the pipes at first, so I'm wondering what eventually drew you to this instrument and gave you the necessary commitment to master it, which I'm sure was quite a process.
Well, they are a tricky instrument. Mm. And I think particularly for children as well, because I started when I was very young, and they're quite unwieldy. You don't get little, you know, mini sets for children or anything like that. You're just straight on with the adult set of pipes. But again, I think when you're a child, you sometimes don't realise how difficult things are. You just get on with it. And if nobody tells you it's difficult, then you just persevere. And for me, it was a strange thing, really, getting to grips with the pipes, because we had a set of pipes at home that my dad was looking after for somebody else who was wanting to sell them. And I just had a little try of them one day. And, I mean, you can make some really awful noises, disgusting noises on the pipes when you don't know how to play them. And
right.
So I was really quite enjoying doing this. I had no interest at the time in playing tunes. I was just trying to make silly animal noises and things.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, my dad came in and told me off for playing the pipes. And I already played the fiddle, the violin, and the piano. So he came in and said, "You put those things away and stick to the piano. You'll never be able to play them." And it was at that point, out of sheer stubbornness, I think, that I decided, okay, he's told me not to do it, therefore I'm going to continue doing it, and I'm going to learn, and I'm going to be able to play this instrument. So it was a show of bravado, I think. Mm. But then when I got on with playing them, it wasn't that I immediately felt, oh, I love this instrument, this is what I want to do with my life. It was the fact that they are a tricky instrument, they are a challenge, and yet I always felt that I would be able to do it. And anything that I couldn't do, I had complete belief that if I just practiced enough, then I would be able to do it.
Right.
And I would be able to do anything that I wanted to do on that instrument. Whereas with the fiddle and the piano, I knew that no matter how hard I tried, there was so much that I would never be able to do on those instruments.
Oh.
So I kind of always felt that belief that I could play the pipes.
Mm. Well, I imagine it. I mean, it's certainly, I would think, sort of like a mountain to climb, and when you get to the top of it, I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is you could see yourself on the top of that mountain rather than with the piano and the fiddle maybe not quite at the top of the mountain.
Yeah, I used to get frustrated with the other instruments and just feel, oh, there's so much that I want to play and that I can't, that I'll never be able to do.
Mm.
But with the pipes, it never felt like a mountain. In fact, I do remember when I was about 11 playing in my school concert, and I was quietly rather proud of myself, and I thought I'd played rather well. And then years later, somebody played me a recording of somebody playing the pipes, playing a tune that I knew, and it was absolutely awful. It was really terrible playing. And I was listening to it thinking, well, actually saying, who is this and why are you playing it to me? And then at the end, I heard my old head teacher's voice saying, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. That was Catherine Tickell, aged 11, on the Northumbrian pipes. It was me. And I could remember that concert so clearly and thinking I'd played so well that it was quite a horrific discovery.
Oh, no.
All that time when I thought I was playing brilliantly, I absolutely wasn't. But I think that was the thing, that in my head, I just was confident on the instrument, where I wasn't so much on the other ones.
Yeah. And I think that's very important
Hopefully I've got better now.
Yes, well, I think that's pretty evident by your career, yes. But I think it's really important with creativity when you are starting out. You do have to have that kind of, A, the passion and love of it, but also you do have to have that certain element of confidence to drive you through sort of, you know, not exactly fake it till you make it, but, you know, you have to have something that gets you through the difficulties, don't you, of kind of learning
Absolutely. Something.
Yeah.
I also think that people are different musicians on different instruments.
Mm.
So I think a lot of people feel that they're not musical because they, you know, so many people I hear saying, oh, well, I learned the guitar or I learned the violin when I was a child, but I'm just not musical. And I really, really believe that maybe they might have been musical if they'd just found the right instrument.
Mm.
And I found the right instrument for me with the pipes. And I never would have been the musician that I am on the piano. I just know, I can tell that it's not coming out for me on that instrument.
Hmm, interesting. Well, if you just joined us, you're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, my special guest from the arts, Catherine Tickell, Northumbrian piper, fiddler, composer, recording artist and educator. We're going to go to a break now, but we'll be back after these messages.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
About you. It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made dessert in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week, Catherine Tickell, Northumbrian piper, fiddler, composer, recording artist, and educator, and very recent recipient of the OBE, which is the Order of the British Empire, which is a great award in Britain. I'd like to play a track, one of the tracks you chose, Catherine. Earlier, now I don't know if I'm going to pronounce this correctly, Tulloch Gorum, is that anything near what it should be?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely right.
From your new album, Catherine Tickell and the Side. And now these are two tracks, and I understand that it's quite common in folk music for two tracks to seamlessly blend together. Can you explain why that is?
I think originally because a lot of traditional music and folk music was played for dancing.
Mm.
So you get a lot of tunes that have the same sort of rhythm. And to keep it interesting for the musicians, instead of just playing one tune for the length of the dance for maybe 5 minutes, we'd have maybe three or four tunes put together. And so that habit just prevailed, I suppose. So that's just what we folkies do.
Now, earlier is composed by you, and Tulloch Gorum is a traditional tune arranged by the Side. Is that correct?
It is, yes. The Tulloch Gorum is a Scottish traditional tune, but actually Early Air has its roots in a traditional English song called Early One Morning that some people may recognise, but this is a kind of... I use that as the starting point.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I mean, that's a really much-loved English folk song. I wondered what attracted you to reinterpret that and whether you were kind of nervous of reinterpreting such a well-known song.
Not really. I think because I've been brought up playing traditional tunes, I feel very comfortable with working with them, I suppose. And also... I feel when you've been brought up to be part of a tradition, you don't have the same... respect sounds a bit weird, but, you know, I think maybe people coming from the outside feel that this is a very special thing and you can't mess with it.
Mm.
And, of course, it is a very special thing, but a tradition is a living thing. It's not something that kind of... The tunes aren't things that happened 300 years ago and have to stay the same. Everybody that plays these tunes changes them slightly, and that's the way the tradition survives and keeps its vibrancy. So, no, I have no problems with messing with things.
So it's because it's part of this very organic process that's gone on for hundreds of years, basically.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, we're going to hear now, this is Early Air, Tulloch Gorum from the album Catherine Tickell and the Side.
Thank you.
Wonderful. That was earlier Tullock Gorham from Catherine Tickle and The Side, a new album. I'm talking to my special guest, Catherine Tickle. That was wonderful, Catherine. What made you choose that track to play?
It's the first track on the album, I suppose. But I don't know, actually. I suppose because it's got a slow tune, and I do like the sound of the Northumbrian pipes on the slow, kind of evocative, slow airs, but also a little bit of something more joyous and dancey to finish off with there.
Yes, yeah, no, it's certainly a very uplifting. So when I was researching your career, I read somewhere that you learnt tunes from old shepherd friends, and thinking of the profession of shepherd threw me back in time. I didn't even know we still sort of had shepherds, and I wondered what they did now, and also why shepherds are associated with the pipes.
Well, in my family, both my grandfathers, they were both shepherds, and in fact, my great auntie was a shepherdess as well.
Oh,
they did have female ones. It always sounds a little bit nursery rhyme and very kind of rural and beautiful, but it was a very hard life. My granddad, for example, left school when he was 13 to go and do a lambing, and he ended up going to this place that was sort of way out, way away from anywhere, and he had to leave his home and go and stay with this older shepherd who was related to him, who was called Big Harry. And Harry was a bit of a morose man. And my granddad, aged 13, had to go and stay in a little shepherd's hut with this older shepherd for about 6 weeks to do the lambing. And it's hard work. But I think in Northumberland, the shepherds, a lot of the farms are little one-man farms, you know, just with sheep and maybe a couple of cows. It's not great land around here, but for some reason the traditional music has survived more strongly in those shepherding communities than it has anywhere else. So there's a very strong connection between the shepherds and the traditional music. So I was lucky, I suppose, that my family came from that sort of background, because I got to hear a lot of the old tunes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I was thinking also, you know, as it was such a hard life, they probably needed something to take them out of themselves as well, you know, to sort of have a break.
That's right, and it was kind of life-threatening sometimes, especially in the winter. You know, there was those archetypal kind of stories about the shepherd being lost in the snow, and they would, you know, they would always be telling these sort of stories because it was something they had to be aware of, and it did happen. So yes, they would quite often play tunes, and it was something that you could do on your own, just sitting if you're out in a place doing a lambing and you're on your own for a few weeks. You could just sit and play tunes, learn tunes, write tunes, all that sort of thing.
Yeah,
and it's also something that you can do together when you get back and you go to the little dances, village dances and things like that, and it brings such a lot of pleasure, and it brings life to a scattered community. You know, when they're living in these isolated farmhouses, they would walk for miles. I mean, my grandparents used to talk endlessly about this. You know, they would walk maybe 10 miles and over the hills, over rough ground with no roads, and they'd go to a dance in somebody's byre or living room or something like that. And then they'd they'd dance all night and play music all night because you couldn't walk home because unless there was a full moon because it would be too dark. So they would just dance all night, then walk back home to their farms in the morning and continue with a day's work.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that must have had a lot of energy.
Yeah.
So. It was very evocative image you created when you were talking about Shepherd being out on his own maybe for weeks with, you know, creating music. I was just thinking about, you know, how alive that feels, you know, to be out kind of in the elements and so linked with the land and also with this creative element as well. I imagine that somebody said to me recently about wine that you can taste the country of origin in the wine. And I'm thinking it's sort of the same thing with the music. It's like this music is sort of soaked in that environment and that experience of these people.
Yes, it is. And strangely, some of the shepherds that I learned from, I remember when I was in my teens, going to a festival with a couple of these shepherds, and it was this international folk festival, and they were completely out of their depth, but they got up on stage and they played their music. And there was a group of shepherds from, I think it was Sardinia or somewhere like that, who were doing singing. And these two groups, the shepherds from Northumberland, old, you know, retired men, and these Sardinian singers, gravitated towards each other, and they couldn't understand a word that the other was saying, and yet they were very happy in each other's company, and they just sat and shared bread and sausages and drank together, and it was really fascinating to watch that. And how did they know that they were the same, you know what I mean? But there was something that drew them to each other.
Next, I'd like to play Corn Fiddler Coquette Sight from your 1999 album Ensemble Mystical. And Corn Fiddler is by dialect poet Alan Wood with improvised accompaniment by you on fiddle. And Coquette Sight is composed by you. That's correct, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, let's hear that now. This is Catherine Tickell, Corn Fiddler Coquette Sight.
When I'm deeds, open wings through a hoop, I can dangle my doom on the end of a rope. I'll speed out this valley to his plane. Heavenly grace, tightening lace, here comes a fiddle and cane. I'll hum through the trees like a bee on the breeze. Hear my gun whistling by. Home for the laird, home for the hare, and home for the game cook and cow.
Was Corn Fiddler Coquette's Sight by Catherine Tickell from her album Ensemble Mystical. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. We're going to go to a short break now. We'll be back after these messages.
About the Santa Cruz Art League on Broadway in Santa Cruz. Founded in 1919, it's 96 years young and provides a wonderful gallery space for local and national artists. It's a great place to view art with 14 shows a year and also to gain support if you're an artist yourself. There are art classes and weekend workshops, many taught by open studio artists. If you become a member, you receive a newsletter, discounts on classes, gifts and exhibit entries, images of your art on the Art League website, and guaranteed participation in the annual members show. It's also a great place to meet artists. Visit the Santa Cruz Art League at 562 Broadway or the website at scal.org. That's scal.org.
This portion of the show is sponsored by Dina Scopatoni, who is an award-winning fashion model, academic teaching modern art history at Cabrillo College, and Vogue fashion photographer. An ocular centrist, Dina's photographs range from fashion editorials to soul-catching portraits to evocative documentary images. The vibrant nature of her work evokes the glamour of Mario Testino, Annie Leibovitz and Helmut Newton, while expressing an understanding of composition and contrast which is all her own. Trained as an art historian at the University of London's esteemed Courtauld Institute, Dina Scopatoni looks for the intellectual and visual contrasts in each of her photographs. If you're interested in viewing her wonderful work, you can go to dinascopatoni.com. That's dinascopatoni.com. Well, Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts, Catherine Tickell, Northumbrian piper, fiddler, composer, recording artist and educator. And if you want to find out more information about Catherine and her work and her touring and all her amazing albums and everything, you can go to her website, CatherineTickell.com, and that's CatherineTickell.com. So I wanted to ask you, Catherine, what do you feel is the importance of retaining traditional tunes? What do you think it carries forward for us as humans?
Well, I think that, well, for one thing, they're good tunes, and it's they're a value in themselves. So that's one thing. You can play them, and it gives you pleasure. It hopefully gives other people pleasure. But more than that, for me, certainly for me, I feel that those tunes are a way of connecting me with my family, with the place that I live. They're like, sometimes I'm playing a tune that might be a couple of hundred years old, and it feels like a little ribbon through history, you know what I mean? It's something that's coming through. And some of those tunes I probably play pretty much exactly the same as they were played 200 years ago. Mm. Sometimes I change them. But also, for example, one of the shepherds that I learned a lot from when I was younger, a man called Willie Taylor, he wrote a few tunes, and although Willie died a few years ago, his tunes are still being played. And sometimes when I play his tunes, I feel I can hear him. You know, when I'm playing, I can hear him playing them with me. Mm. 'Cause I played them so many times with him. Mm. And I suppose, you know, many pieces of music in other genres can be like that, that you can play it and it reminds you of somebody else. But I suppose the traditional music, that's my music. That's what I know about. Mm. But yeah, so many connections, the way it links people and place and history.
Yes. You refer to your work as being deeply rooted in the landscape and people of Northumbria, and this is an ancient kingdom comprised of parts of northern England and southeast Scotland, which no longer exist in terms of official counties. I'm wondering if you can share with us what Northumbria and its traditions sort of represent for you.
Well, I think the fact that it is that border area between England, well, I'm saying it's between England and Scotland, which is obviously slightly, we are not actually a separate county, separate kingdom anymore. But to me, it's that area. And that border has been fought over for hundreds of years. Mm. So the fact that there is this area that actually predates England and Scotland, the ancient kingdom of Northumbria was in existence before the concept of England or Scotland.
Yeah.
And yet, Northumbria doesn't exist, and England and Scotland exist, but that area that people were fighting over, it still has its own identity. Mm. And I think the fact that there's been so much blood spilled there, and also the family connections are really, really important. Mm. Much more so than whether you're actually English or Scottish, or whether you're on the English side of the border or the Scottish side of the border. And that has always been the case. You know, you'd get an English family and a Scottish family maybe banding together and allying themselves together against another Scottish family or whatever it might be. And those family connections are really, really strong. And that's another thing that comes out in the music and the songs that my dad sings. A lot of them, you know, they might date back to, for example, the Battle of Otterburn, which was 1388. But my dad's still singing songs that are about that sort of, about the Battle of Otterburn, and they still mention certain families. And it's, you know, it's the sort of thing that if you imagine that transplanting to other areas in the world where there's conflict and thinking, oh, that's terrible, you know, hundreds of years later to still be singing about certain families and their deeds. But somehow here, it seems like a very positive thing.
Mm.
It's part of our history, but it's not. We don't sing these songs to incite any hatred or anything like that. It's a shared history.
Mm.
It's kind of hard to put into words, really.
Yeah.
I've never really thought about that aspect of it, but.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I think you've given a good sense of it, definitely. And I was also thinking about this idea of retaining traditional tunes with all this history. It's sort of almost the antithesis of where it feels like we're going in terms of all the internet and social media and everything being dipped into so superficially, you know, and this is sort of weighed with all this sort of drenched in history and family and all of that. I mean, do you see that as an important reason to keep it going in a way so that people have this sort of antidote to our sometimes more shallow lives today?
I think so. And I think when I'm doing concerts, I try and, you know, a lot of my music is, it's got more modern arrangements and things like that. But the tunes at the heart of it are the same. And I always try and tell a few stories about the tunes and give a sense of that sense of continuity. And I think the audience, particularly in the cities, they like that. They like to know that that still exists somewhere, even if it's not part of their lives.
Mm.
I think it's important to people to be able to believe that those values are still in existence.
Yes.
And also, for us, you know, as I'm driving from, you know, the city of Newcastle where I work in the university, as I'm driving home, all the place names on the signposts, they're tunes for me. So, and they're lines in songs. So the whole landscape is translated into music.
Mm. Oh, that's lovely. Well, last I'd like to play Ad Geffryn, The Monday Men, both composed by you from the new album, Catherine Tickell. I keep saying your name wrong. I apologise. It's Tickell, right?
It is.
Yes, Catherine Tickell. There we go. Listeners, it's Tickell. So we're going to play that now. Ad Geffryn, The Monday Men.
Thank you.
That was beautiful. That's Ad Geffrin, The Monday Men, by my guest, Catherine Tickell, and The Side. And sadly, we've come to the end of the show. I wanted to thank you so much, Catherine, for taking the time to talk to us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Ruth.
Well, thank you, and congratulations on your OB again. It's an amazing achievement. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. Just wanted to remind you, if you want more information on Catherine, you can go to her website, catherinetickell.com, catherinetickell.com. And if you want more information about the show, you can go to itsaquestionofbalance.com. I'll see you next week.